Welcome back to Lungcast, the monthly respiratory health podcast series from the American Lung Association and medical news site, HCP Live. I'm not your host, Dr. Al Rizzo, Chief Medical Officer of the ALA, but I am joined by him today. I am show producer Kevin Kunzman, Associate Editorial Director of HCP Live. Dr. Rizzo and I are recording an out-of-schedule episode today to address the climate crisis derived from wildfire smoke that has traveled from Canada to regions of the United States Northeast, Midwest, and South regions over the last few days. The air quality index, which we will discuss at length in this episode, has reached historically poor levels in major U.S. cities, including New York. In fact, Dr. Rizzo, as you and I record this discussion at around 10 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday morning, we are both in an approximate 200-mile area that constitutes as the most air-polluted region in the country and possibly the world. I wasn't able to check the map. But with that in mind, how are you today?
I'm doing fine, Kevin, and thank you for this opportunity to talk about such a timely issue, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, that's right. Yes, I wish we had a more fortunate circumstance to be recording a special episode today, but here we are. So let's just start first and foremost. I think this is the most pertinent subject is, identifying this metric that everyone is now coming to better appreciate in the Northeast region with regard to wildfire smoke exposure. What exactly is the air quality index and what is it measuring?
Sure. So the air quality index is something that the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, developed to let individuals know about the quality of the air in their particular county or an area. It's made up of several pollutants, ozone, particulate matter, and then carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, nitric oxide, basically the six criteria pollutants. But by far and away, the most important two are ozone and particle pollution. And particle pollution is the main one right now that we're seeing make these levels so unhealthy. And right. Particle pollution itself is really fine particles. 2.5 microns is the size that is recorded. And this represents about 1/30th the size of a diameter of a hair, piece of hair. And the importance of this size is that it is able to be respired into the airways, and into the airways deeper. And it travels with even smaller particles called ultrafine particles, which are 0.1 micron in size, which too can get not only deep into the lungs, but also cross that little membrane in the airways that lets them get into the vascular system, leading to potentially non-respiratory issues like cardiac events, which we know also occur at a higher rate when particle pollution is this high.
Right. And that sort of segues perfectly into what we wanted to talk about next is the value of understanding this metric, which, by the way, most people's interpretation right now, I assuming, is coming from their weather apps or other services that they're using. It's a 0 to 500 metric. So the greater number you're seeing, of course, the poorer the air quality index it is. But with regard to people's awareness of this, why they're tracking it, why they're discussing it possibly for the very first time today, what exactly are the risks? Is there a risk of people dying from poor air quality, for example?
Oh, there's no question that mortality has increased with poor air quality. I think the most recent figures that worldwide, probably 7 million people die each year based on what the World Health Organization says is poor air quality. In this country, it's in the hundreds, 100,000 or so due to air quality issues. And the reason for importance to know about this is that at fairly good air quality, if the AQI is green or yellow, that's probably not going to affect most individuals outdoors. Once you get into the next category of the orange level, individuals who are at risk will start to notice some symptoms of cough, maybe a little tightness in their chest, a little wheezing. This represents people who have a known chronic lung condition, such as asthma or COPD. Right. It also affects those who may be outdoors and not know about the risks that they have. Young children who are more active outside and breathe in air more rapidly than a normal resting adult may notice the symptoms, and the elderly are also at risk. Pregnancy, unfortunately, is another risk factor for individuals who breathe in this quality of air. It can affect their pregnancy.
With consideration to that, these people may be more sensitive to immediate signs and symptoms as well of being impacted by poor air. What exactly should clinicians, I guess, be preaching to patients or just be on the lookout for in terms of acute signs and symptoms of poor air quality impact?
So even aside from when we're having a crisis like this, it's good habit for patients who have chronic lung disease or at risk for issues to be aware of the air quality and get in the habit of checking their phone app, a weather app, newspapers, radio stations, always report the air quality index. The reason for that is it can sometimes help you shape what you do with your day. On days like right now, where it's very hazardous for every individual to be outside in these areas, you try to limit how much outside exposure you have. Try not to go out and do things that are going to require heavy exertion, mowing the lawn, playing baseball. I mean, so any activity like that really should be curtailed, and trying to stay indoors as much as possible. If you can, you want to try to isolate yourself from that outside air by turning on your air conditioner, if you have it, put it on recirculate, try and keep your air airtight inside. Individuals who have HEPA filters, that will also help. If you have to go out, minimize the amount of time. And this is also the time to pull out those N95 masks that you hopefully still have some from the pandemic, which are the best ones to use in this air quality issue.
Right. Just touching point on something that you mentioned as well is, you know, I've seen that anecdotally from some individuals who are experiencing for the very first time the last few days is this counterintuitive instinct of seeking fresh air. Fresh air does not exist in the regions that are being impacted right now. So those, you know, resources, those ideas of going for a walk being good for you, going for a run being good for you, going down to the shore, for example, in the Northeast region right now with it being the summertime, that's not theoretically in any case actually healthy for you for the time being. So any and all of that should be, you know, completely rescinded for now. The safest air you have is coming filtered from your home. So like you're saying, using those resources at home to stay inside are the most effective right now. So thank you for that. Regarding just beyond, I guess, clinicians' recommendations for, I guess, immediate response to this, what else should we be, what else should your peers be recommending to impacted patients, those with pre-existing conditions, including asthma, cardiometabolic risk otherwise?
Many of these patients hopefully should have an ongoing good relationship with their healthcare provider. It should have an adequate supply of medications available, especially what we call the rescue inhalers for patients with asthma and COPD. That's quick-acting albuterol-type medication that should be available. Many asthmatic patients should have an up-to-date asthma action plan that tells them what to do as their symptoms develop. By and large, that is really the crux of the matter. When they start reaching symptoms that are not being controlled by the medications they're on, that's the time to call their physician or seek some care at an urgent center.
I know there's a lot of patients with milder forms of asthma who may be encountering a circumstance where they have an expired inhaler or just a rescue inhaler option that's no longer feasible for them and are re-encountering an instance of an exacerbation today, tomorrow, and otherwise. Is there any other recommendation for what they should do other than get in immediate contact with a clinician?
Well, I think you hit on all of them. Try to avoid the exposure to this air. Have that medication available to you and try to minimize the amount of activity you have to do outside.
Regarding the current issue, as we're alluding to, it was something close to 200 wildfires occurring in Canada, from what I understand, across the very expansive countryside that are impacting the air quality here in North America. There's some weather reports now showing that cold fronts and other wind changes are going to continue to push this down further south, maybe lingering in the Midwest for a little bit longer than we would like. Obviously, this is going to be, unfortunately, not an immediate fix. How long do we anticipate to live in this unique circumstance right now?
Well, the short term with regard to the current problem, a lot of it depends on the prevailing winds. I've seen weather reports showing that by this weekend, the Northeast might be spared a bit of the effects that we have right now. But if you look at the long term, the real issue is that this is a complex mix of weather issues, hurricanes leading to more trees being downed in the forest, so there's more kindling, the dry environment leading to these things being very easily ignited by the thunderstorms and lightning that occur. So it's already a matter of a historic level of wildfires in Canada this year, more than they've had ever before on average, and we're early in the season. So the climate warming, the warming of the climate and the climate change is going to contribute to more wildfires occurring, not only in Canada, but out west, and really wherever forests are. The Pine Barrens of New Jersey, south of where we're located, have had more wildfires as well. So we just need to be aware of this and be prepared. I don't think it's a short fix, because climate change is a longer fix, and we're going to have to deal with these issues.
Absolutely. It's unfortunately a domino effect. And I think a lot of people are recollecting what was happening on the West Coast in the United States back in 2020, when it seemed like everything was going wrong, a rampant instance of wildfires affecting everyone from Oregon to Los Angeles, San Diego area. So a lesson learned from that is that this is not an immediate resolve. And sometimes it's letting nature, get done what is going to happen. So in the interim, obviously, there's a lot of public health response, a lot of flight closures, cancellations today, school closures. My office personally shut down shop until the AQI gets up to a higher standard. I was going to ask you, Dr. Rizzo, on the level of like public health response, is there anything that an individual, I guess, should be using as a barometer beyond AQI for making those sort of decisions for, I guess, other factions of their livelihood when it is safe to resume work and travel?
Other than the AQI, many patients who have asthma in particular may have a home peak flow meter, or they may have a spirometer. Peak flow meter, a little more common.
Yeah.
They should be aware of what their personal best is. And then if they start having any symptoms, check that peak flow reading and see how far from their baseline they may be drifting. That will help them understand what they should be doing with their medications and whether or not they should be contacting their physician.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. And obviously, lastly speaking, we're gonna be seeing, unfortunately, long-term clinical effects from what's occurring right now, whether people understand that or can really comprehend how this acute issue can affect them long-term. Unfortunately, they will come to learn that in some way or another. Can we talk a little bit about what the clinical presentation may be of, poor air quality exposure down the road, not even just immediately?
Sure. Before I say that, I think we have to realize that, people were used to the California wildfires, and that fire material did reach the East Coast, but it was at a much higher altitude when it came here. Right now, what we're experiencing is much low-level, eye-level effect of the particle pollution. So when you go outdoors now, people may feel it quickly in their eyes, burning eye sensation, nasal congestion, and that's even before the respiratory symptoms, which might include certainly the cough, chest discomfort, a little bit of wheezing. Those should be a sign that your airways are being affected. And again, get out of that type of environment, put on a mask, N95 if you have it. That's the most effective in this situation. Make sure it's properly fitted to give you the best protection as well. And again, if this is new to you, this is something to potentially notify your healthcare provider about, because it may be the first time you're being a trigger showing you may have predisposition to an airway disease like asthma or COPD. The other important thing is don't add to the problem by smoking. If you're a smoker, this is the worst time to be outside smoking. To get out and do your smoke break is not the good thing to do in this environment. So always try to get off the cigarettes as much as you can, especially if you have a predisposition to lung conditions.
Both on a personal and environmental health level, we need to stop compounding the issues that are occurring.
Exactly.
Leading to
even things like using electric vehicles, using electric lawnmowers, anything that in the long run is going to decrease the fossil fuel use that leads to greenhouse gases and the particle pollution and ozone.
Yeah, we have a lot of work to do at both the physician level and the federal and international governance level to make adequate responses to the effects that we're having.
And we're going to all be advocates for the proper direction of our legislation. And certainly I'm going to put a plug in for the American Lung Association.
Go ahead.
Lung.org is a great place to go to get all the information we talked about and their abilities for you to sign up and take action with your congressional delegates as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Dr. Rizzo. Is there anything else you want to add relevant to the subject?
I think you've covered it all. And I thank you for the opportunity to discuss it.
Absolutely. I think you covered it, really. I was just along for the ride. So I appreciate learning about it, because obviously it's immediately affecting me and my family right now. I'm looking out the window. Right. All I see is the smog, unfortunately. So regardless, thank you again, Dr. Rizzo, for talking through this scary circumstance with us. And thanks to all of you for listening to Lungcast. We will hopefully be back to our regularly scheduled programming later this month with an episode we have planned for pulmonary hypertension. But in the meantime, you can learn more about air quality and climate change related health from Dr. Rizzo's interview with Drs. Alan Green and Pune Saveri in our May 2021 episode. Be sure to subscribe to Lungcast on your preferred listening or watching platforms, and visit lung.org or hcplive.com for more news and resources on this subject. Dr. Rizzo always says this line when he signs off, and it feels more pertinent today more than ever. If you can't breathe, nothing else matters. So stay safe, everyone. We'll see you next time.